From Sky News Centre at 5, a police officer has died while trying to help people caught out in the flooding and storms in Cumbria. PC Bill Barker was swept away as a bridge at Workington collapsed. The Prime Minister has described him as a very heroic, very brave man. Chief Constable of Cumbria Police, Craig Mackay, says the whole force is devastated.
He leaves a wife, four children at their home in Cumbria, and it's devastating news for them, and our thoughts and sympathies are with them at this very difficult time.
More than 200 people had to be rescued in Cockermouth as flooding reached 2.5 metres. The 100th repatriation ceremony at RAF Lynham has been held. Hundreds of people lined the streets of Wootton Bassett to pay their respects to Rifleman Andrew Fentiman of 7th Battalion, the Rifles, and Corporal Laurent Moulton Thomas of 33 Engineer Regiment. A devoted husband who mistakenly strangled his wife during a bad dream has been freed by a judge. Brian Thomas from South Wales admitted killing Christine in 2008, but a rare sleep disorder had led him to believe she was an intruder. A carjacker is facing jail for running over a woman with her own vehicle. Caroline Johnson had been scraping ice from the windscreen when Kevin Richardson jumped in and drove off in Berkshire almost a year ago. The mother of four is now wheelchair bound.
Now that they have been convicted, I can now hopefully move on with my life and put my experience behind me. It has been an emotional and physical and difficult time, and I have now many more hurdles to get over.
Nine football fans have pleaded guilty to violence following Glasgow Rangers' UEFA Cup final defeat. Another man admitted assaulting a police officer when trouble broke out after a big screen showing the match in Manchester stopped working. And Lady Gaga is deceased for the Queen. The American pop star is the latest act confirmed for the Royal Variety Awards. That's the latest. I'm Gemma Culture.
This is Bristol Community 93.2 FM.
Do you think you have a problem with cocaine or other drugs? Cocaine Anonymous can help. Call 0800 612 0225 or visit our website on www.cauk.org.uk. We're here and we're free.
Welcome to BCFM's Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling, and this week we won't be going through this week's news as usual. We'll be having a chat to Sarah Wright. Now, Sarah comes from an independent campaigning group called Mast Sanity. We all know that technology is moving at an incredible pace these days, but the question is, has the regulation of all this new technology and the public safety of all this technology been catching up with the way the technology itself has moved? Sarah doesn't think so, and she has all sorts of evidence that suggests that particularly mobile phones may actually be more dangerous to our health than we're told. We'll be talking to Sarah in a moment, but first here's some music from Al Stewart, The Year of the Cat.
Running like a watercolor in the rain. too far. Explanation should have told you that she came in the year of the cat. She doesn't give you time for questions as she locks up your arms, and you follow to your sense of which direction completely disappears. By the boots hard walls near the market stalls, there's a hidden door she leads you to. These days she says, I feel my life just like a river running through the year of the cat.
Al Stewart with The Year of the Cat. Now on to this week's interview with Sarah Wright.
Hi, my name's Sarah Wright, and I'm in a national campaign called Mast Sanity, which we campaign against mobile phone masts and other wireless technology like wireless internet and cordless phones in the home, which constantly emit microwave radiation.
But, I mean, we've had radio waves going through the air since, in between the wars, without ill effects with those sorts of waves. Can you just tell us about why you feel that the microwaves are worse?
Well, when you say we've had radio waves without ill effects, that's not actually true. There have been ill effects reported in the scientific literature back to 1932, but traditional TV, they use sort of low-frequency radio waves, and there are not very many TV towers in the country. There are a few thousand, whereas there are over 50,000 mobile phone masts and rising. And there's several differences between the two. The TV towers are much taller, so that people didn't actually live in the main beam, whereas the mobile phone masts, planning law is set up so if the mast is under 15 metres tall, that you can't object on health grounds. And they can get the... You only have 56 days to object on other grounds, otherwise the mast is deemed approved. So they're actually a lot lower, so a lot of people end up living in the main beam.
What is the main beam?
Well, it's the beam of maximum intensity, or the highest strength beam.
Doesn't that just mean that, you know, if you're actually close to the mast within a few metres?
No, they usually cover up to 500 metres for a 15-metre tall mast. And so basically cancer clusters are appearing around phone masts within that distance. Although there are about 7 studies in scientific literature showing a doubling of leukemia within 2 kilometres of a traditional television tower. But obviously there are fewer TV towers, and leukemia is a low incidence disease, so people haven't generally noticed, except unless of course they've got it.
It sounds to me like you're a bit of a Luddite. This is a kind of technology that you want to sort of roll back and stop and really take us back 100 years.
Well, I'd rather take us forward and look at a safe technology. I think it's rather backwards not to test the technology for health before you release it on the population. And I thought that was backwards. It's more intelligent to test it first before it's released. And, of course, this was never safety tested before it was unleashed. There are scientists developing other technologies using light frequencies or infrared frequencies. There's not much money available for research because the government basically hasn't told the industry to do something about it yet.
Yeah, but you see, there are all sorts of checks and balances and regulators, and all this stuff would have been tested before it's released to the public.
Well, it wasn't. Of course it wasn't. I mean, in 98, the International Commission for Ionising Radiation Protection issued their guidelines for maximum exposure from phone masts. But they knew that microwave radiation could heat you as in a microwave oven, so they've set limits so that the radiation can't heat you up. But they specifically say in the guidelines do not protect against any other effects from lower levels such as cancer or DNA damage. So basically the guidelines do not protect you from getting cancer.
But I've seen seagulls and birds landing on these masts, and they seem perfectly happy up there.
Well, maybe they are, but maybe they're sterilised afterwards. Who knows? We haven't measured them. People don't usually live on top of a phone mast, but it would not be very good for them. In fact, there's a story of an engineer and his friend who climbed up a mast to repair it, and they thought it was off and it was on, and the one metal fillings melted and the mercury was pouring out of his mouth, and the other guy's just died of cancer.
Okay, so what can people do if they feel that they may be being affected by electromagnetic radiation because it's completely invisible?
Well, they can. There's a company called an organisation called PowerWatch, which has developed meters which are quite cheap, so that people can buy one, which is like a Geiger counter, but it detects microwave radiation at levels above the Salzburg regional guidelines, which are the lowest limits in the world at the moment. Which would probably keep you safe over a 10-year period, and they're a lot lower than the limits set by Britain. And they could buy one of those if they are affected by mobile phone masts. People are shielding their houses from the radiation, basically. But what people don't realise is that their own cordless phones and wireless internet inside the house are emitting radiation at levels of intensity, which should be the same as though there were a phone mast outside the house. So they're buying cordless phones, wireless internet, and not realising they're radiating themselves completely unnecessarily.
Was Focus with a song from the 1970s called Sylvia. Now back to this week's interview with Sarah Wright from campaign group Mast Sanity. So what you're saying is that the regulatory system really for such as Wi-Fi, internet Wi-Fi, has broken down. What evidence have you got for that?
No, only thousands of studies. Which one would you like to see? I mean, there have been meta-analyses of the studies. Stewart Report was set up in 2000, which was a UK report, and it came out, it looked at some of the studies, and it said there wasn't enough evidence, you know, obviously to ban the technology, but a precautionary approach was required. They were going to advise parents that children shouldn't use mobiles, but again, they made the leaflets and they never were sent to the households, although you can see the information on the Department of Health website. But since then, there have been other reviews, the most recent one by a working group of international scientists called Bioinitiative Report came out a year and a half ago. They found, you know, evidence for cancers, DNA damage, etc. in the literature. And all their research has just been published in April in the Journal of Pathophysiology.
Have you found that children are more affected than adults, or maybe older people? Is there any one group of society that gets affected more by electromagnetic radiation?
Well, in terms of sensitivity, some people immediately get effects such as headaches or dizziness. It's a minority, about 5 to 10% of people. And these do tend to be women and children more than men, which we're not quite sure why. But those are typical symptoms that people might experience. In terms of worse effects like autoimmune diseases or cancers, children are more susceptible, yes, because they're certainly more susceptible to use of a mobile phone because their skulls are thinner, and there are studies showing that the radiation can penetrate right through the skull of a child, a five-year-old, whereas half the skull for a 10-year-old as opposed to an adult. And again, because their cells are dividing quicker, there's more that can go wrong as they're growing. Obviously, we're very concerned about children. In fact, we've set up a new charity called wiredchild.org, specifically looking protecting children. And one of the biggest worries is they're putting wireless internet into all our schools in the UK, well, in fact, all over the world. 70% of our schools have Wi-Fi, and in the case of primary schools, they're putting the transmitters, the routers, inside every classroom, and they're transmitting all day long. The intensity will be the same as though there were a phone mast right outside. Children are getting sick, constant flus. You know, there's one flu after another, and, you know, no one is doing anything except two teachers' unions have spoken out, the Association of Teachers and Lecturers and Voice, both calling for a ban on Wi-Fi in schools. It's been pulled out of Paris libraries after librarians went on strike because they got migraines when it was put in. There's a town in France where the mayor is removing all Wi-Fi from schools. There's a university in Canada where it's never had it because the president was a biologist and reviewed the evidence first. And the Sorbonne has announced a few weeks ago that they're to remove Wi-Fi now as well.
Now, what about the planning system? Because for most people, this is the... If they hear there's a mobile phone mast in their area about to be put on top of their house, say, for example, if it's council flats, often they're installed on council flats, what can one do to fight this through the planning system?
Well, you've only got 56 days for the letter to get to the operator, for the council to send the letter to tell them that the mast is refused. You've got to enlist the support of councillors, enlist the support of residents. You need a petition and letters, at least 50 letters, individual letters from residents, with several good reasons why the mast shouldn't go up, and they should be reasons of visual amenity. You can't actually object on health grounds. That was written into planning law in 1984, and one does question why that happened. So you need to enlist the support of councillors, the local newspapers, any famous person you've got, roll them out on the streets, have a protest. That's the best way to turn away a phone mast.
So the only reason to object is because the mast doesn't look nice.
Exactly.
almost there. Gotta keep cool now, gotta take care. Last car to pass, here I go. And the line of cars drove down real slow. And the radio played that forgotten song.
That was Dalton Earing with Radar Love. Now back to this week's interview with Sarah Wright from campaign group Masked Sanity.
Can you tell us about the these detectors you were talking about, ways of actually kind of measuring these electromagnetic fields? Is this a realistic? I mean, people may think that this is a little bit paranoid to carry these detectors around.
Well, I mean, when people get them, they actually like to carry them around because it gives them a sense of what radiation they're subjected to, especially if they're living in the middle of a city where obviously the levels are higher than in the countryside. But then when you get used to it and you begin to know what's going on, it gives you a sense. I mean, if you could see the radiation in the city, you'd be in a smog, basically. So the Germans have coined it electrosmog. And the intensity levels are literally trillions of times higher than the natural background levels in the microwave part of the spectrum, which is, you know, the natural occurring microwaves come from outer space. They were left over from the Big Bang, and the intensity is virtually zero. So they've pumped it up trillions of times because it was effectively an empty part of the spectrum. So it isn't paranoid at all. It's really sensible. You could wait and see if you get cancer, of course, or maybe take precautions.
So how much do these detectors cost, and where can you get them from?
Well, there are a couple of companies, or three companies, I think, that sell them. I think they're about £57. EM Fields sell them. There's a company called Wireless Protection which sells them, and a company called Detect Protect which also sells them.
What about in the use of a mobile phone? I think this is probably the place that most people will be thinking about now, maybe the habits that they use with their phone. Is there any way that you can use a mobile phone a little bit more safely than maybe that we're used to?
Yes, there is. I mean, on the Wired Child website, we've got a list of do's and don'ts and ways to reduce exposure. And then again, on the Masked Sanity website, there's a really good documentary made in Australia that was on Australian TV last month, and you can see it on the front of our website with two brain surgeons in Australia worried about the increase in brain tumours they're seeing and two people dying of brain tumours. But what you can do is text instead of put the phone to your head. You could use it on speakerphone, perhaps, if you have to talk. And there are some headsets which have an air tube instead of a wire, because the radiation can travel up the wire into your ear. But if it's an air tube, like a stethoscope, only the sound will travel up the tube. So you can use those, but cut down use, basically, and, I mean, really avoid children having them. And again, if they're on in your pocket, they are emitting radiation all the time because they're sending handshake signals to the nearest phone mast. And although they're lower levels than when you are on a call, over long, you know, years and years of sitting there, they can cause damage, basically.
What are these handshake signals?
Well, they're called handshake signals. Well, basically, your mobile phone will emit a signal all the time to the nearest phone mast to see if you're getting a call. So we call them handshake signals.
Oh, just touch, touch a cold finger, beckons you to enter his web of sin. You feel for a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He
That was Shirley Bassey with Goldfinger. Now, back to this week's interview with Sarah Wright from campaign group Masked Sanity.
What about how close you are to the mast itself? Does it make a difference in the power of the signal that's coming out of your phone?
Oh, yes, they do say. I mean, if you are using a phone, it does power up and power down depending whether there's a strong signal or not. So if you're near a phone mast, it will power down. But it's best to use it on the side of your head pointing towards the mast, because if you put it on the other side of your head, then the radiation's travelling through your brain between you and the mast. But again, it's all very well for you walking past, but for people living next to the phone masts, they've got an increase, you know, a tripling of cancer. There have been two studies showing a tripling of cancer within 5 years of living within 400 metres of a phone mast. One was in Germany, the NILA study, and one was in Israel by two scientists, Doctors Wolf and Wolf.
So are there any cases of people getting really angry about not being able to object to these masts on health grounds?
Yeah, I mean, masts have been pulled down by various communities. There was a group in Wishaw in Warwickshire a few years ago. There was a cancer cluster. I think about 80% of the people there had a tumour. Some were benign, but a lot were malignant, and even the horse. It was a hamlet, and there was a horse in the field who had blood problems, and they couldn't work out what was wrong with it. And then in the night, mysteriously, the phone mast was pulled down. The horse did recover. Obviously, you can't recover from cancer instantly, but, you know, the sleep disorders got better and so on. So that mast, and you know, that does happen in communities, because basically we've got no recourse in law to do anything about it. The best one was, well, the funniest one was a guy in Australia who got an army tank and drove around the streets of Sydney and mowed down 6 mobile phone masts. He did get onto Australian TV at least, but it wasn't shown here.
Now, you've mentioned several websites. Can you give us a little web tour of where places on the internet where people can find good, solid research and scientific information about mobile phones and other forms of electromagnetic radiation?
Yeah, well, scientific evidence, there are two good sites in the UK. One is called powerwatch.org.uk, and they started looking into the effects of power lines 20 years ago or more, so it was a natural progression to go and when the phone masts went up to have a look, because the damaging effects are very similar, leukemias, cancers, etc.
Is that a scientific site? I mean, is this website run by a qualified scientist? This, yeah. I think, is because it's a little bit worrying when you think of sort of amateur campaigners putting up all this information, posing as scientists.
No, he is an engineer, Alistair, and he was also on the Stuart, with William Stuart's committee looking at the research evidence. So, you know, he's very well regarded, and he's on quite a few HPA committees. And then we've got the HESE UK website, which is spelled H-E-S-E UK, and they're a group of about 30 international scientists. So the loose affiliation of scientists, what they're trying to do is put all the research up so that people can see it, because a lot of it's buried in scientific journals. I mean, so a lot of the research is in German and Russian, so the English, where it is published in English, it's obviously easier to see, so it is sort of slightly English biased. But we've got evidence on disappearance of the bees and so on, the research evidence, that is. So that's quite a massive website for scientific evidence.
What's this about the disappearance of the bees?
Well, colony collapse disorder, basically. You know, it depends which beekeeper you talk to, but I've been speaking to some who've been beekeepers for 30 years or more, and they said that the bees started behaving strangely about 15 or so years ago, and that people who started keeping bees more recently didn't really know it was ever any different.
Well, what sort of different behaviour amongst the bees?
Well, what's happening now has come to a head, really. It's so bad that they're actually disappearing and not making it back to the hive. The hives are open and they're finding that they're completely empty. The bees basically get lost because what we know is that the bees navigate using the Earth's natural magnetic field. And because the radiation intensity levels are so strong and ubiquitous now, especially in densely populated countries like Britain and America, obviously it started there, they just get lost. They can't find their way back because of the interference. They also talk to each other by vibrating the honeycomb inside the hive. And again, the frequencies they use are interfered with. It's like a lot of noise. They can't read each other's signals properly. And then their immune system is also being damaged the same way as ours is, so that if they get a pest like varroa mite, instead of, you know, combating it as they might have in the past, they're all succumbing to it. So bees have been found with totally destroyed immune systems. So actually they're being attacked on three fronts. The Americans, I think something like three quarters of bees have disappeared in America, and they're having to buy them from Australia and ship them over. But of course the American mobile phone mast problem is as bad as ours. They've also got something called HARP, which is based in Alaska and is a massive array emitting similar microwave signals, and they also think it's the interference of the HARP with the phone mast is also making it worse. But HARP covers a lot of Western Europe as well, as a state.
Life can be bright in America.
If you can fight in America.
Life is alright in America. if you're all white in America.
Organized crime in America, terrible time in America.
You forget I'm in America.
I go back to San Juan.
I know a boat you can get on. Bye-bye.
Everyone there will give big cheers.
Yes. Everyone there will have moved here.
That was the cast of West Side Story with America. Now back to this week's interview with Sarah Wright from campaign group Masked Sanity. What about other websites?
Well, Wired Child is specifically to look at protecting children, giving the government warnings. I mean, the French are just calling a ban on primary school children having mobile phones in primary schools. So we're trying to tell everyone what our official government warning is, which is that children under 16 should use mobile phones for essential calls only. That is the official what the official report is from the Department of Health, but people don't know that, so we're trying to tell people what the official sites say. We're also looking at Wi-Fi in schools, because that's a really growing problem. There are teachers that are affected, they've become hypersensitive when Wi-Fi was switched on at Stowe, which is a public school in Buckinghamshire. That was the head of classics there, so they had to remove the Wi-Fi, and other schools are removing Wi-Fi when the parents find out how dangerous it is. So that is really concerned with looking at what children are exposed to in the home and school. And then, there's Mask Sanity, obviously, which originally started up campaigning against phone masks.
Is that your site?
Yes, one of them. But obviously we had to expand it to look at all wireless technology, because Wi-Fi, cordless phones. The thing with the cordless phone is the base of the cordless phone, which is emitting 24 hours a day, and people don't know. German government have warned their citizens, because the German doctors sign petitions, so their citizens know, but ours don't. But again, these new smart meters are a problem because they're going to be transmitting all the time. Like,
what is a smart meter?
Well, it's a government plan to have remotely read meters for electricity and gas. So they're going to change our meters, and we're going to have what they call smart meters. And they're going to be able to turn on and off your gas and electricity by some central command and control unit. But the way they're doing it is through microwave radiation. So you'll be forced to have a transmitter in your house whether you want one or not. Obviously, we're all going to refuse because they've never been safety tested. And then low-energy light bulbs, another problem. They contain mercury. So if you drop one, you have to evacuate the house. But they also emit microwave radiation, ultraviolet radiation, and send dirty electricity around the wiring in your house.
Dirty electricity. Now, come on, you've got to be making that up.
I'm not making it up, unfortunately. I wish I were. I think it's a growing problem, a new problem in the UK. The problem is being investigated in America because it's been around longer. It's basically where there's interference on the electrical wiring in your own house from all the, basically the electrical load and transformers are particularly bad. Because they chop up the signals, and so you get high voltage spikes basically being carried around all the wiring in your house, so it sort of comes out of the walls, and it can cause the same health effects. There's a professor at Trent University in Canada called Dr. Magda Havers, who's done several studies on that, on people with diabetes in houses with high transients, and when you can put filters in actually to bring the transients down. These people's blood has gone to normal in an hour. Anyway, those studies are all published and peer-reviewed.
Okay, so what about the... Is it Tetra?
Police.
Yeah.
Tetra. There was actually a site called Tetra Watch, although it's not so active, but there's a lot of research up there as well. Tetra is a police mobile phone network, basically. It's a system the police use. So, again, it's not safe, just as the rest of it isn't. It's different frequencies that the police are using. So some police have succumbed to esophagus cancer because the antenna, they often wear their phone with the antenna sticking up near their throats. And there's a scientist called Barry Trower, who's a microwave scientist, who did a report for the Police Federation, which is available on the Tetra Watch website. They asked him to look at the research evidence before it went out, and he came to the conclusion that it was best not to go along with this type of network, or at least get the permission of the police officers that were going to be forced to use it before they did. But of course, he was ignored.
So this is a completely separate network to the public mobile phone network?
Yes, it's completely separate.
Now, can you tell us in what way it's different to ordinary mobile phones?
They weren't very much like mobile phones, but they use a different frequency. I think it's 400 or so megahertz with a low pulse. What I didn't say before is that the high-frequency microwaves are just higher frequency than radio waves. One part of the spin is that the government and industry refer to the radiation as radio waves because they know that people feel radio waves are safe. People are suspicious about microwaves because of the microwave oven, so they just don't call them microwaves, even though technically and by definition they are. However, having said that, so you've got a high-frequency microwave with data is sent along in packets, which are sort of like pulses. So you've got a very low-frequency pulse being carried along a high-frequency wave, and a lot of scientists think it's this low-frequency pulse which is causing the harm because it interferes with our heart rhythm, brainwave rhythm, and so on. So with the Tetra, there's a 17 hertz pulse being carried along. And some of the earlier research in America by Professor Ross Adde was looking at 16 hertz pulsing, and found that calcium ions were being released using this particular frequency. So 17 hertz is very close to this frequency, and he was saying specifically you should avoid using frequencies that are anywhere near the frequencies understood by our body, our cellular communication. But they've put that one into the Tetra system.
Why is it there are so few scientists speaking out about and publishing material about mobile phone masks? I mean, there are some, but the majority are silent.
Well, in the UK, first of all, there's hardly been any research. Most of it's been done in Germany and Russia. But in the UK, for example, Dr. Hyland, who was at Warwick University, he's a biophysicist, and he published a report in about 2001. He presented it at the EU, theoretically looking at why there are probably bad effects from pulse microwave radiation on the human organism. After that, his university came under pressure. I heard it was from the HPA, some people say.
So who are they?
The Health Protection Agency in the UK, to see if the university supported what he was saying, and of course they backed off, and he wasn't allowed to use their letterhead. And then more pressure was put on a few years. He resigned or retired, took early retirement, shall we say.
So do you think that maybe scientists are sort of not really able to speak their mind and steering around the issues?
Well, I know young scientists, scientists in the middle of their careers that can't speak up because they're afraid of losing their jobs, basically. That's in the UK, and I think it's the same everywhere. And it does seem to be the older scientists or the retired scientists which are speaking out. There's a Dr. Walker in Warwickshire who's retired, who's mapping cancer clusters in Warwickshire and Lincolnshire around phone masts. And then, for example, in Germany, there was a doctor at a university in Germany, and he regularly had his rooms broken into, his equipment stolen, and the odd thing is that his computer was left, but they'd wiped all his research off it, and that happened fairly often to him, and gradually his department of 12 was reduced to a department of none. There's only him left. And there's a professor in Sweden, Professor Johansson, who gets death threats and white packages through the post, and regularly has to try and he's actually not allowed to do any more research. He was researching about 10 or 15 years ago on the effects of radiation and even computer terminals on the skin, and he's found the mast cells in the skin changing upon exposure. And he's also looking at electrical hypersensitivity, but he's got no more funding to do research in that area, so he's still got his job at the university, but he has to research in other areas. And the same thing happened to Professor Lai at Washington State University, who found double-strand DNA breaks in rats. He had great trouble with the industry, and he's also got no more funding to continue research in this area, so he's researching other areas, but they will still do research reviews and they can still speak at conferences, but again there's no more funding for them to do the research because obviously they say what the industry doesn't want them to say. And in fact in the UK the only research is being done by the phone industry jointly with the government.
Now we haven't seen many television documentaries on the subject. I think there was one Panorama a couple of years ago which was very critical of the home Wi-Fi systems. Why do you think there have been so few television documentaries particularly which might really make the public more aware of some of the choices that the government are making about how to regulate the whole electromagnetic spectrum?
Well, Panorama was a really good documentary on Wi-Fi. It sort of did scratch the surface, but it had about five eminent scientists appearing on the programme, including Sir William Stewart from Britain's Health Protection Agency, who said that the World Health Organization guidelines were wrong and out of date, which was, you know, considering he's an establishment scientist, was pretty strong. And Dr. Obereveld from Austria saying that he would remove children from a school if it had Wi-Fi in it. In fact, in Sweden, they do remove a child if they're sensitive. They remove the Wi-Fi if the child is sensitive to the radiation. So Panorama were really good doing that programme, but they were attacked by the rest of the BBC afterwards for it. And I think one problem, certainly with the broadsheets, is that The Guardian in particular, will not write anything about this issue. They seem to be very pro-industry for whatever reason, financial or otherwise, one might guess at. And I think also a lot of BBC journalists read The Guardian, so that is one problem. Another problem is that the BBC are developing TV to be, programmes to be downloaded onto mobile phones. They're actually not even independent in this particular area. So actually you might find more in newspapers than you would on a television documentary. So what Panorama did was very brave and unusual.
What about digital television?
Well, yes, that will actually be more like the radiation that's emitted from a mobile phone mast than it used to be, because the radiation will be carried along in the same sort of pulses that... there's slightly different ways of doing it, but in packets, basically. And in fact, in Germany, where digital TV's gone up, German scientists are reporting adverse health effects in people living nearby the transmitting towers.
Well, all this stuff about going digital, we're not being told about this.
Well, we wouldn't be by TV networks, unfortunately. I think the way forward is to acknowledge it's dangerous and try and develop a safer transmission system. I mean, human beings are very clever. They've got to the moon. Of course they can develop one, but if nobody's willing to look, then it won't be developed.
That was Gloria Gaynor with Never Can Say Goodbye. Quite appropriate for the sort of almost addiction-like behaviour we have with mobile phones nowadays. And I'm no exception, I can tell you. Gloria Gaynor can't say goodbye, but I can, and I have to now, because it's coming up to 6 o'clock. And we'll be back next week with the usual style of Friday Drive Time, where we'll be going through the week's news. In fact, maybe we'll be doing 2 weeks' worth of news, because we have not had a live programme this week. Anyway, so see you next week at 5 o'clock on Friday. This is Tony Gosnell wishing you a lovely week.